Extreme storms, wildfires, rising sea levels. The results of global warming have become ever more evident in recent years. But how different might things have been had an industry, which knew about climate change long before the rest of us, acted on that evidence instead of trying to deny it? In the second of two episodes, a team of Swiss filmmakers examines Big Oil's big lies.
Far out over the Atlantic, a flying observatory.
Over 40 years ago, the world's largest and most profitable oil companies began to realize the effects their products were having on our climate. Their own private scientific research told them so, well before it became common knowledge. But for the next four decades, time we could have better spent transitioning to greener forms of energy, they sought to discredit and downplay evidence of global warming and the calamities it would lead to. Melting glaciers, rising sea levels, out-of-control wildfires, extreme storms. These are only some of the things we've seen in recent years, and it's likely to get much worse. Yet, as this two-part investigation is revealing, the oil industry and its political friends have been relentless in trying to manipulate public opinion about climate change, bullying the media, lobbying governments and disparaging the scientists and activists pleading for an end to our fossil fuel addiction. It's still happening today, even in Switzerland.
Weltwoche Daily.
Here is how Roger Koeppel, Swiss politician and publisher of the populist right-wing magazine Weltwoche, recently described Professor Sonja Seneviratne, one of the world's leading climatologists, on his video channel.
Eine Klimaaktivistin, eine Klimakämpferin in den Bodentruppen der großen Greta Thunberg, der grünen Heiligen, die im Moment die Hirne sehr vieler Wissenschaftler und Wissenschaftlerinnen in Anführungszeichen besetzt hält, erobert hat. Also Sie sehen das, das sind doch keine Forscher, das ist doch keine Wissenschaftlerin.
What provoked the outburst? An interview in which she said that climate change was alarming and unprecedented.
Hier haben wir es mit Gläubigen zu tun, mit Überzeugten, mit Propheten, mit Apokalyptiken, mit Leuten, die immer schon wissen, was passieren wird und aus der Sicherheit dieses Überzeugtseins, dieses Glaubens entsprechend handeln und entsprechend gebieterisch, tyrannisch auftreten.
J'ai rien à ajouter. Je veux dire, c'est complètement absurde. Mes convictions, elles viennent de mes connaissances scientifiques. Et c'est au même titre, je veux dire, si on commençait à critiquer les scientifiques parce qu'ils affirment que la Terre est ronde, voilà. Par contre, je pense qu'on peut se poser la question pourquoi des politiciens peuvent se permettre de tenir des propos où ils discréditent la science. Pourquoi des partis qui sont très bien établis peuvent se permettre d'essayer d'ignorer la science. Est-ce qu'on devrait accepter ça dans une démocratie? On peut se poser la question.
Roger Koeppel is a national councillor from Zurich and an influential voice in the SVP, one of Switzerland's main right-wing parties. We wanted to ask him about his attack on Professor Seneviratne, but he declined an interview. His party, the SVP, is interesting because of its ties to a fossil fuel lobby, graphically revealed in 2019 by an NGO, the Swiss Energy Foundation. The lobby group includes major transportation federations like Auto Suisse, TCS, ASTAG, Swiss Oil and Economie Suisse, and has links with several parliamentarians, mostly from right-wing parties. In 2021, the SVP campaigned in Parliament against a bill to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. A former leader of the SVP, Albert Rösti, was also president of Swiss Oil and of Auto Suisse, the Association of Car Importers. We asked Mr. Rösti for an interview, but he declined. Instead, he referred us to Avernergie Suisse, the country's association of fuel importers. They too declined. After numerous emails, so did most of its members. Finally, we approached Christian Emark, an SVP national councillor from Zollofern. So what did he think about the warnings of climate scientists?
Ich möchte dann keine Vorwürfe machen, aber es ist möglicherweise so, dass die Auswirkungen überschätzt werden. Selbst bei den wissenschaftlichen Grundsätzen gibt es ja unterschiedliche Meinungen. Und darum kann man nicht einfach sagen, nur weil ein paar Wissenschaftler irgendein Szenario machen, man soll jetzt einfach alles über den Haufen werfen, was bis jetzt erfolgreich war.
Un de vos collègues qui s'exprime beaucoup là-dessus, Monsieur Coppel, il dit justement, ces scientifiques sont des activistes. Vous pensez, vous êtes d'accord?
Ja, klar, ja. Und auch das ist ein weiterer Grund, warum man nicht einfach alles eins zu eins in die Politik einfließen lassen kann, was die Wissenschaft sagt.
We showed him the Swiss Energy Foundation's revealing diagram about the fossil fuel lobby in Parliament. It listed him as president of the Zollofern section of ASTAG, the Swiss Road Transport Association.
Est-ce que vous pensez que le lobby pétrolier est très influent au Parlement?
Ich bin jetzt wirklich kein Petrollobbyist, wie Sie mich da nennen. Ich bin Präsident der ASTAG-Sektion Solothurn. Die ASTAG, das ist die Nutzfahrzeug, der Nutzfahrzeugverband.
Road hauliers are, of course, huge consumers of gasoline and diesel. So does Christian Emark defend their interests in Parliament?
Ich bin kein Lobbyist. Ich bin ein freier Nationalrat und ich kann hier sagen, und das ist das Schöne, ich kann hier sagen, was ich will, weil ich habe weder ein finanzielles Interesse, was ich sage. Meine Perspektive ist, ich will das Beste für meine Wähler, für unser Land, für unsere Bevölkerung. Und deswegen bekämpfe ich zum Beispiel das CO2-Gesetz.
In 2021, the SVP, Avenergy and Swiss Oil all fought against the proposed CO2 bill to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and helped finance the successful No campaign in the subsequent referendum. It was a notable victory in the oil lobby's fight to slow Switzerland's transition to more sustainable energy. There are similar stories elsewhere in the world. In Washington, D.C., for example, thousands of lobbyists are working behind the scenes in Congress to oppose anti-oil and gas legislation. Their work isn't secret, but it's still shocking to hear them talk openly about their methods. In 2021, Keith McCoy, senior lobbyist of the American giant ExxonMobil, was caught doing just that in a Greenpeace sting.
Exxon, did we aggressively fight against some of the science? Yes. Did we join some of these shadow groups to work against some of the early efforts? Yes, that's true. But there's nothing illegal about that. Yeah. We were looking out for our investments. We were looking out for our shareholders.
It was a revelation for a lot of people that, you know, they know what they're doing. They know how they're manipulating the political system here in the United States.
The video stunned California Democrat Congressman Ro Khanna. He sits on the House Committee on Oversight and Reform, which in October 2021 began investigating Big Oil's climate change disinformation campaign.
That was the catalyst. I mean, Keith McCoy basically was on tape bragging about his role in killing climate legislation, bragging that he gave the rhetoric, the company gives the rhetoric about caring about climate, but behind the scenes they're killing legislation to tackle the climate. And I said, we've got to get them in to explain this.
The committee will come to order. This is a historic hearing. For the first time, top fossil fuel executives are testifying together before Congress under oath about the industry's role in causing climate change and their efforts to cover it up.
You can either come clean, admit your misrepresentations and ongoing inconsistencies, and stop supporting climate disinformation, or you can sit there in front of the American public and lie under oath.
We can't solve the climate crisis unless we tackle the climate disinformation crisis. Many people don't know that these big oil companies, particularly Exxon, have been lying to the public for decades. Now, why does that matter? Because they prevented us from diversifying. They prevented us from making the investments in the 70s, 80s, and 90s in renewable energy. So the first part is that they should be held accountable. The second part is that they are continuing to mislead.
Perhaps unsurprisingly, the oil company's response was to present themselves as models of low-carbon rectitude and to deny allegations about a climate disinformation campaign.
Thank you for the opportunity to be here today to discuss the urgent need for action on climate change and Shell's effort to advance society's transition to a lower carbon future.
ExxonMobil has long recognized that climate change is real and poses serious risks.
Any suggestion that Chevron is engaged in an effort to spread disinformation and mislead the public on these complex issues is simply wrong.
API supports climate action. Governments, industries, and consumers must accelerate policy and technology solutions together.
After several hours of statements and questions, the committee wasn't making much headway.
Are any of you today prepared to make any statement saying we're going to take accountability on something so important and stop funding groups that are actively engaged in any form of climate disinformation?
Okay, I take that you don't want to take the pledge. All right.
The hearings continued for months. So did the oil industry's claims it was working to decarbonize, which Ro Khanna later described as outrageous greenwashing. His hope now is that eventually big oil will go the same way as the tobacco industry. In 1994, cigarette manufacturers lied to Congress and it marked the beginning of their decline.
Yes or no? Do you believe nicotine is not addictive?
I believe nicotine is not addictive, yes.
Mr. Johnson.
I believe nicotine is not addictive.
I believe that nicotine is not addictive.
Well, the big tobacco hearings captured the American imagination, and people said it is wrong that these tobacco executives know that cigarettes are addictive, and yet they're denying that. And that led to a cultural change in America. We need a similar cultural change when it comes to the embrace of alternative energy.
But if the U.S. Congress, with the House now back in the hands of the Republicans, hasn't yet managed to force through that cultural change, others are keeping the fight going. This is the East Coast of the USA. Like everywhere on the planet, these shores are experiencing the effects of global warming. Katie Luciano is a geologist who works for the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources.
This is one of our erosion transects, and I'm measuring from the forest to the sea and getting a better idea of how the shoreline is transitioning as it moves and erodes backwards. We've had episodes of hurricanes, a lot of very high tides, and the erosion rate has basically doubled from its historic erosion rate of 7.5 meters per year.
In other words, an erosion rate that's twice what it would be without climate change.
You can look back here and you can see we are right in the forest here. So you can see all of the vegetation and the beach is actively eroding onto this island.
So this place, this beach, was a forest as dense as this forest?
Yes, it was as dense as this forest right here where we're standing just several years ago.
In fact, rising waters threaten much of the eastern seaboard of the United States. Charleston in South Carolina is among the cities most at risk. Built on a peninsula almost at ocean level, it's always been exposed to inclement weather. But global warming poses another challenge entirely.
We are on the front line of climate change from sea level rise and from the increase impacts of extreme weather. We have seen the direct impacts year after year for a decade now. Every year, flooding, tide, like when I was a boy, maybe 5 tides a year. Now it's 90 tides a year that impact our streets. We don't discuss the politics of climate change anymore. It's reality here.
The city is being hit by ever more frequent and more serious hurricanes. Protecting the shoreline has thus become crucial. Since Hurricane Irma, which struck in 2017, tens of millions of dollars have been spent raising these fortifications up by just one single meter. But it's not enough.
Okay, so Charleston also faces surge events. If you have a major hurricane, Irma was not a major hurricane. If you get a major hurricane and it comes in, it could push a wall of water 10, 12, 14 feet high. And if you would get that, that would overtop this. This would all be flooded. So we are working with the federal government to see if we can get them to help us build a surge wall, a surge structure around the entire peninsula.
The idea is to build a giant dike offshore, like that in Venice, to hold back the ocean. But the cost is estimated at around $3 billion, a staggering amount of money for a city of only 150,000 inhabitants. So the mayor is taking legal action against those he holds accountable for the threat they face.
The city of Charleston is suing 24 big oil companies over damages to the city and their contributions to climate change.
We are filing a lawsuit today against big oil. And the reason is they have contributed through a intentional deception to change the story of the impact of the burning of fossil fuels on climate change on this planet. So I feel it's not fair to the citizens in Charleston to have to bear the burden, the total cost of these improvements that are needed because of sea level rise.
The complaint directly targets a host of big oil companies, including ExxonMobil, Shell, Chevron, and BP, mainly because of their disinformation campaign.
Defendants concealed the dangers, promoted false and misleading information, sought to undermine public support for greenhouse gas regulation, and engaged in massive campaigns to promote the ever-increasing use of their products at ever greater volumes.
I believe that they contributed willingly to this problem, and they should be part of the solution.
They lied? They lied?
Yes. It was a misinformation campaign. It's very similar to what the tobacco companies did with the cigarette smoking and the impacts of cigarettes, right?
Charleston's lawsuit against the oil giants isn't the only one. Some 30 major U.S. cities and states have done the same, including Baltimore, New York, Washington, Massachusetts, and Minnesota. The plaintiffs are supported by the Center for Climate Integrity. Richard Wiles is its president.
These cases are very winnable, and that's why the oil industry is terrified of these cases, right? They're far more fearful of these cases than they are of anything the Congress might do or anything that any state legislature might do. Because, you know, they've got a lot of power in the Congress. They pretty much own the Republican Party. But they are afraid of these cases because they have the potential to stick them with the damages that they have caused. If you think about the cost of adaptation from climate damages to climate damages in the United States, it's going to be multiple trillions of dollars. If these companies have to pay their percentage, their portion, their fair share of those damages, it'll be multiple hundreds of billions of dollars.
Wiles says that the oil companies are particularly fearful that the lawsuits will force them to open their archives and make compromising information public.
If those documents come out, the reputational damage to these companies will be enormous, right? These are the things they fear.
In Europe, courts have already ruled against one of the oil giants, Royal Dutch Shell. This was the unprecedented ruling of a court in The Hague in May 2021.
De Shell-groep nieuwe investeringen in het winnen van fossiele grondstoffen moet nalaten of haar productie en verkoop daarvan moet beperken. Meer concreet, RDS is verplicht om via het concernbeleid van de Shell-groep eind 2030 de CO2-uitstoot van de Shell-groep en de toeleveranciers en afnemers van de Shell-groep terug te brengen met netto 45%.
The case was launched in April 2019 by a coalition of environmental NGOs and more than 17,000 Dutch citizens. They accused the multinational of destroying the climate with full knowledge of the facts. Like its American competitors, Shell, they said, knew of the danger posed by its products some 40 years ago.
Dit is een historische dag voor echt voor ons allemaal. Voor het eerst in de geschiedenis heeft een rechter geoordeeld dat een grote vervuiler moet stoppen met het veroorzaken van gevaarlijke klimaatverandering. De rechter liet er geen twijfel over bestaan. Shell is verantwoordelijk voor het veroorzaken van gevaarlijke klimaatverandering en Shell moet ermee stoppen.
The groundbreaking nature of the judgment can be found in its details. Shell must reduce emissions by 45% from its own facilities, such as its boreholes or its gas stations, but also the emissions from the consumption of its products, for example, gasoline. In March 2022, Shell filed an appeal against the ruling, arguing that its own plans to reduce CO2 emissions by 2050 are sufficient. In a statement, it also said,
"We question how Shell can have a legal obligation to reduce carbon emissions. We do not control from customers who are not under a similar legal obligation to reduce their emissions."
The company believes that it's not justice's role to set or impose environmental objectives. But that's not how this environmental lawyer and Swiss Green MP sees it.
C'est le signal d'un changement de paradigme, d'une manière très nouvelle de poser le problème en matière climatique avec une justice qui n'a pas d'agenda politique, qui est totalement imperméable au lobby et qui simplement dit le droit. C'est la formule pour la justice. Le juge va dire le droit. Maintenant, c'est l'arrivée du judiciaire dans l'arène climatique et c'est tant mieux. Ça va probablement jouer un rôle très positif.
C'est sidérant, en quelque sorte, dans notre système capitaliste. On va demander à une entreprise d'arrêter de produire
Alors,
quelque chose.
C'est vertigineux comme défi, pour dire les choses de façon tout à fait claire. Mais en réalité, c'est à la mesure du défi qui se pose à nous. Mais si on veut limiter la casse, on doit sortir du carbone. On doit se désintoxiquer du carbone. Et donc, nécessairement, il va falloir dire droit dans les yeux aux entreprises qui sont à l'origine de ce business, vous devez vous réorienter.
The tragedy is that it took 40 years for that radical turnaround to begin. Instead, climate change denial and disinformation sowed doubt in people's minds and left us all facing unpalatable choices and an uncertain future.
Si à 40 ans, les compagnies pétrolières avaient écouté leurs propres chercheurs, leurs propres scientifiques et avaient choisi un autre chemin, on en serait où aujourd'hui?
C'est clair qu'on serait dans une situation complètement différente. On n'aurait plus vraiment de problèmes climatiques parce qu'il faut bien voir que, en fait, une grande partie des émissions de gaz à effet de serre, des émissions de CO2, ont lieu, en fait, par exemple, depuis les années 90, depuis le premier rapport du GIEC. C'est ça qui est effrayant. C'est que, en fait, à l'époque, on était dans une situation où on pouvait anticiper qu'il y aurait des problèmes si on continuait sur la même trajectoire.
Donc ça, c'est quand même très grave, ça veut dire que les décisions qu'ont prises ces entreprises ont vraiment plombé notre avenir à nous aujourd'hui.
Ça n'y a absolument aucun doute à ce niveau-là, oui. Et je pense qu'il y a une forte responsabilité, disons, du fait que ces informations, en fait, n'ont pas été partagées à l'époque et qu'il n'y a pas eu plus de transparence sur ces informations qu'on avait à l'époque.
Is there a word to qualify this disinformation campaign?
Evil. I mean, it's just pure evil. I don't know what to say other than that at this point. I mean, the science is so clear, and yet these companies continue to mislead and deceive the public about it. Everybody's life on the planet is at stake. These companies are just despicable. Their options are there. Clearly, the technology is available for us to switch, and they just want to milk their products for as much money as they possibly can, as long as they possibly can, consequences be damned.
So what if Big Oil hadn't lied? It's a question we put to the woman in the USA we met right at the start of this investigation, lamenting the destruction of her ancestral lands.
If big oil companies hadn't lied 40 years ago, we probably wouldn't be standing so close to this water right now. We probably would be way back there in the distance amongst all the trees that are standing up, hearing the birds chirping, seeing the seagulls come begging us for a snack. So let's don't make 40 more years of mistakes. let's tell the truth now.